Welcome to Discovery One, Chapter Three, more than likely part one.
Just one warning, if you've got the GOTS.net alias in your address books for Cavi instructors, take it out, because that address is being spammed and I've just killed it off today, so you're sending to CaviInstructors@ciscavision.org or any of the other aliases. I will be announcing this, but that address has the GOTS.net one will now bounce, so it has to come out of your address books. So for all you auto-completers, CaviInstructors@GOTS.net has to go.
Right, cheers.
See, I don't know what's wrong with me. I did that the first day you told us we were on the new...
Most people.
Yeah, but I left an alias in for a few weeks for people who weren't going to do the uptake so quickly. And there are a lot of people who rely on their autocomplete and their address books, so CaviInstructors@GOTS.net has to go. And, yeah, so that's all good.
Okay, yeah, I was just playing with my sensitivity a little bit while Carrie was going through that, so hopefully we won't have the issues we did last time. Alright. Anything else before I get into Chapter 3? Because I had, like I said, I do have a feeling it's going to take, like, two classes to go through this.
Yes, but.
Yeah, just one real quickie. We don't need the that cable, the crossover cable. We don't need that till Chapter 4. Is that correct? If I remember right,
three.
I'm looking at the labs. It's
three.
Okay.
This one.
We do need it for Chapter 3. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then let me ask this real quick, and maybe it's something that should be answered later. But in case it's really quick and easy. Where I'm at, what I was able to do, I could probably do it later on in the week, but the guy that would know how is not there. So I just had to buy some end connectors and some cable. And they're colored and they just slide into the little end pieces. How does one label the numbers? And, you know, how do we know what's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 on an Ethernet cable?
You're brave.
Oh, God dear.
It's the option I had.
If you are visually impaired, you don't easily, because you can't see the colours of the wires. The 1 through 8 are from left to right when you're going to plug the cable into your mouth with the tip facing down, so 1 is on the left. That said, you get somebody sighted and Google and a crimping tool and you crimp the ends on. We have not found an accessible way of doing it when you're vision impaired, because whilst you could get the wire map correct, you would never get the colours correct without sighted assistance, because the cables are too narrow and the colours aren't that cool. You can actually duplicate this lab by just plugging two machines into a hub or switch. You don't actually need the crossover, as long as the only two machines that are plugged into the hub or switch are the machines that you're working on, and that there is no router getting in the way. So that is another way to do it.
And that's
okay,
the way that I end up
asking
doing
someone
it.
If I ask someone about, you know, get someone to help me with the colors, they go 1 through 8, and you're saying that is, if it's facing me with the little thingy down, the little metal thing down, that will be starting from the left-hand side, you say?
It's all in Chapter 3, mate, with the pictures. So pull up the curriculum, and
okay.
The cable pinouts are all
okay.
There.
Okay.
Actually, no, that's
great.
Chapter 4,
that
I think, Kerry.
Is it in 4,
I read
is
Chapter
it?
3, and I missed that part.
Yeah.
I missed it, and I read Chapter 3.
No, it's in 4.
It is.
The pinout assignments are Chapter 4.
There's also an audio lab on it, too, where Geraldine, I believe, sings the wire map.
She does.
But for the rest of us, these cables are fairly accessible to find pre-made, aren't they?
It's like buying a Coke at a service station. It's pretty likely. If you go into a computer store and say, crossover network cable, they will give you one. So
okay.
They're not difficult to get hold of. But the trick is, if you're not going to use a crossover cable, you have to be using a hub switch, not a home router, because the whole point of this lab is to not have any DHCP and not have any network access.
Oh, okay, yeah.
No, that's all I have. But yeah, sorry, Chapter 4. Or Google for make Cat 5 crossover cables, and you'll find about 27 different articles that are very descriptive with big pictures and nice colours and everything, which won't help you if you're blind, but the pinouts are usually written out. But you will need somebody with crimping tools. You can't just sort of bite down on the end of the cable to crimp them into place. That doesn't work. I know people who've tried.
Yeah, I've heard that's fun. Dad built all the, I think it was Cat 6, for our, when we were running broadband connection points all over the house, and Dad said it was fun.
Okay, one quick question before I get started. Which way do I need to adjust my sensitivity so it doesn't pick up everything in this room?
The higher it is, the less sensitive it is. So, if it's on 20, you take it to 30. If it's on 30, you take it to 40. But the problem is you've got a huge amount of in there, so it's going to be a very fine line between picking that up and gating off. So, have fun.
Okay, I'm going to try.
Ryan, you're not in chat.
Yeah, I know. I haven't got there yet.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you saw a message, sorry.
Yeah, I haven't got there yet. Hang on. There we go. Okay. Oh, okay. Significantly better. Alright, anything further before we get into the chapter? Okay, welcome to Discovery 1, Chapter 3, more than likely Part 1. As I said previous, this will more than likely take two classes. It did with the Indians, it has in the past. So, I'm predicting that's the way it's going to go this time around. So, here we go. First section of the chapter is Introduction to Networking. The nice fun stuff. So, anybody want to define a network?
Anything that joins two computers together and allows them to share resources?
And that is correct. Two or more, depending. So yeah, you can either have two computers joined directly, which is, of course, your peer-to-peer network, or you can have multiple computers joined through your nice little hubs, routers, or switches, which we'll get into later. So, there used to be, the text says before 1990, it used to be three separate networks, one for data, one for voice, and one for video. Now, those have all come together into what? Anybody have a guess?
The internet?
The type of network, not necessarily the type of network is what I'm looking for.
Converged.
Yes, that would be it. Your converged network. That would be where your voice, your data, and your video are all on one nice, wonderful, hopefully fast network. Okay. And that's pretty much that section.
Is it worth mentioning that... I was just going to mention, because I mentioned this to Grace last night, and it seems somehow relevant. 100 megabit Ethernet only uses two of the pairs, which you'll cover in Chapter 3 or 4. The other two pairs were originally used for telephone use. So you would actually have two separate networks running on the same piece of cable.
Okay.
And I think that's also Chapter 4, where they get into all the nice, wonderful cables.
Well, you technically do now with DSL. I mean, if you have two, if you have a telephone line with a DSL line, one pair of wires is for the telephone and one's for the DSL, I believe.
No, it's not.
No, that's in Chapter 4, but your telephone line is your DSL line, and it's split bandwidth-wise. That's why they have the filters that they have to put in. Sorry, sounded like somebody was keying up.
I wanted to by accident. Question. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Alright, so Let's go to benefits of networking. So, you have your SoHo network, which is your small office or home and home networks. Nicely abbreviated. So, obviously with the small office networks, you're going to have a lot of networking and all. And according to your text, communication over networks is going to be a lot less expensive, hopefully, than something like regular mail. And Lord only knows who wants to wait 2 or 3 weeks for an update for an application that you can get in 2 or 3 minutes. That's certainly a big advantage, especially of networks. Alright, so they go and they define the internet, and I think I'll let somebody else take that one. Okay, anybody want to define the internet?
The biggest wide area network in existence?
Well, that would pretty much cover it. Considering the fact that, of course, they say it is the whole network of networks. Simply because you have your nice little individual networks, whether they're home, small office, corporate, and they're all combined. So, and then of course they go into different ways you can use the internet for like email, voice chat, all that nice wonderful stuff. Okay. Questions before we move into basic network components. And yes, fortunately, a lot of the stuff in this, you will, for those in IT Essentials, you will see more of in chapter 8, I believe, if I remember correctly. So you'll get a lot more of this stuff in chapter 8. All right. So, basic network components. Yeah, chapter 8 exams are always, especially for IT Essentials, was always fun. All right. So we have basic network components, and they have, well, they have four that they actually list in the text. They have hosts, they have shared peripherals, they have network devices, and they have network media. So, anybody want to take a stab at what hosts are?
It's the medium that sends and receives the information.
That would be your network media. Your hosts are... Oh, go ahead, Kate.
I would have thought that the hosts would have been the main place where the functions of the network are set up. So, like, it's the one that holds all the actual main programs and things like that.
Well, that would
sadly not.
Yeah, that's kind of getting close to your definition of a server, which is a host. Your hosts are anything that directly connects to a network, anything that can get an IP address from a DHCP server, or anything that you can actually manually set an IP address. So that would be
your computers and laptops and iPhones and stuff.
Yeah, that would be your computers, your iPods, your iPhones, whatever other devices you so desire to connect to your network that can obtain an IP address. That would be correct. Alright. So, your shared peripherals would be like your well, alright, let me do it this way. Let's define a peripheral. Anybody?
Something that attaches to something.
Yes.
Or, like, relies on something, like a parasite, if you will.
Well, yeah, that would be like your printers, your scanners, anything that will attach to a computer or another host. So then they go into shared peripherals, which are the ones that attach to the hosts, but they don't directly attach to a network. So like your printer that you share over the network, or the scanner that you share over the network, would be a shared peripheral because it's not directly attached to the network. Now, they do actually have printers that are hosts because of the fact that they have the Ethernet port on them, and they directly attach to the network, and they have an IP address, or they have wireless printers. So those would be considered hosts as well, because they can obtain an IP address from the DHCP server. I don't think the wireless printers, well, I was going to say, I don't think they can get a manual IP address, but they probably could if you go in and configure them that way. But that would be rather interesting. And I'm not sure I would even want to try that one. But anyway, so that's the one main distinction between your shared peripherals and your regular printer that could be considered a host. And the reason I bring that up is because they actually do have one of the activity questions that asks that. Alright, so then you have your networking devices, which are the devices that actually go in and help connect your hosts. So that would be your hubs, your switches, your routers. So they don't actually get, well, technically they don't actually get an IP address, but they are there for connection purposes to be able to expand the network. And then the last group in here is your network media, which are the cables or radio waves, depending on if you go wireless. That will actually be the medium for transfer over the network and data transmission over the network. So, before we go into the activity, do we have any questions about those four network components? Okay, hearing nothing, we'll move into the nice, wonderful, fun activity. So, you have to match the different network components with the correct categories. So your categories are peripheral, host, network media, or network device. So, they give you a list of devices here, and you have to just basically specify which one it is of the four: network media, peripheral, host, or network device. Is everybody in chat? Let me this out here.
Yeah, everyone is.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Nehemiah. That helps.
I looked up.
Okay, so your first device is a network printer. Is that host, peripheral, network device, or network media? Answer now. Technically, okay, we still had some answers coming in, so that's why I was waiting a minute. Technically, which is why I stressed that to begin with, your network printer is considered a host, because it directly connects to the network, and it does get its own little IP address. If it had said a printer attached to another host, then that would be a peripheral. But because it said a network printer, that's kind of where the clue came in, that it was that it's a host. Is everybody clear on that one? Okay. Device number two is a switch. Which of the four categories is that? Yes, that would be a network device. Very good. I shouldn't really even need to ask this one, but what about a hub? Yes, that would be considered a network device as well. I probably should just group those two into one choice. Alright. Nice little tricky one. What about an MP3 player? And just to make a note of this, this is your standard MP3 player. There's no network functionality to it. Yes, that would be considered a peripheral. Yep, that's it. Now, why... Somebody answer this one, just out of curiosity. Now, why would it have been a peripheral versus a host? So why would it be a peripheral versus being a host?
Because the network.
I was gonna say, Jamie, go ahead.
It's not getting an IP address.
Yep, that's it. Aiden, what were you gonna say?
The same thing.
Okay.
can I throw a spanner in the works? Just as a thought point, an iPod Touch is a network device and it's also an MP3 player, but luckily the question doesn't say iPod Touch.
Well, an iPod Touch is more of a PDA than an MP3 player. I mean, it does so many other things. I mean, it's like saying a Braille speak is a piece of notepaper, or Braille mode, I should say.
I guess it depends how you're using the thing, too. Like, I mean, if it can connect to the network in its own right, fine, but if you're just connecting it to your computer, then surely it'd only be a peripheral, like if you're just dumping music onto it, or whatever.
Well, that's kind of why I made the point of saying, you know, that it doesn't connect to the network, that it's not a host. And Carrie's right. The iPods, the iPhone, well, the iPods mainly, could be considered hosts because obviously they can connect into your network. So that does tend to throw a nice little wrench into the plans. But anyway, fortunately, they didn't ask about the iPods.
Well, so. And consider that this curriculum was written before those were really starting to take, before those were really hitting the market in a large way.
Yeah, that's true.
This curriculum is a couple years old, two or three.
Yeah, that is true. Alright, so here's what I'm gonna do. Let's just group a PC and a laptop together. So we'll just group both of those. So which ones would which component would they be? Yes, they would both be considered hosts. What about a local printer? Well, that would be considered a peripheral. It could, if the activity said, you know, that it was shared, it would be a shared peripheral, so that's a good point. But since the activity said just a local printer, the one that they're looking for is peripheral. I should have grouped server in with the other one. Okay, so what about network cable?
Whoa, that was weird.
Well, that was kind of weird. We had two answers come in at the same time, or multiple answers come in at the same time.
Three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yes, that would be network media. And I should have grouped server with the other two. But what would a server be considered? Yes, that would be considered a host. Okay, so, questions before we move on from that. Looks like everybody's got a pretty good grasp of that, but questions before we move on. Okay, so, let's talk about the computer roles in a network. So, the main points of this, you have clients, you have servers, or you have computers that can be both. So, given that, let's somebody define client for me.
A device that gets information from a server.
Yeah, that's a close enough definition. Your clients are the computers that request information from servers. So yeah, that's a close enough definition. So then, what would that make the servers?
The distributors of information.
Or those that manage, like, network resources, I suppose.
Well, they're the ones that actually serve out the information. So your web servers, your FTP servers, email servers, all those are considered servers for the fact that they're the ones that actually provide access to whatever information you are looking for. And then of course you can have computers like Windows XP, Windows 7, Linux that can do both functions at the same time. They have an activity here, and I'll have to pull this one up. So the activity you have to define, you have to identify the correct server depending on the services that the client wishes to use. This is going to get rather interesting. Okay. So we have four clients, and we have four servers. So your clients are as follows. Client 1 has a web browser on it. Client 2 has an email client and a web browser. Client 3 has an FTP client and file access client. And client 4 has an email client. So do we want those repeated before I move into the servers?
Yeah.
Are we going to be able to cache all this
anyway,
stuff?
Please.
Would it be easier to do it the other way?
Specify which... Okay, I think I see what you mean.
Maybe, just a suggestion, like read the servers and then say... And then, you know, and read the servers and then say what client goes with server 1 or something. I don't know, only an idea.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm going to do it that way. Because I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, that's going to be an interesting one to try and do it the way I was originally going to. So, your first server has a web server and an email server. So, would it be client 1, which has a web browser, client 2, which is your email client and your web browser, 3, which is your FTP client, file access client, or 4, which is your email client? So which one would actually need that particular server? Yes, that would be it. Okay, server 2 has an FTP server and an email server. If you need me to repeat the clients, I can.
Could you repeat the 3 and 4? The first two I remember, but the 3 and 4 I don't, please.
Okay, client 3 is FTP client and file access. client. And client 4 is an email client only. Okay, this is actually going to get a little bit interesting the way that these answers have been written out, but I'm looking at this, and it looks like, yeah, excuse me, your second server would go with client 3, and also a couple other, I think there's also a couple other clients it goes with as well. The way this one's written out, the answers are a little confusing to me. But it looks like client 3 goes to the FTP and the email server, which would be the server 2. Okay. Server 3 is a web server only. That would be 1, because that's the web browser only. Let's see. Server 4 is a web server and a file server. So which one would that go with? And according to this, yes, it would be client 3. This one's a little bit confusing to look at the answers the way that they've written them, because there's multiple answers in here, at least in the answer here. So that one actually does go good. So, all right, that's all of that one. That was good job. Okay, so any questions before we move on to peer-to-peer networks? Okay, so we move on to peer-to-peer networks. And peer-to-peer networks basically are either two computers directly connected, which is the general definition of a peer-to-peer network, at least in this chapter. Your text also says that you can connect multiple computers to a peer-to-peer network using a network device, like a switch or a hub. So that would also, according to the text, constitute a peer-to-peer network. Now, because your computers in a peer-to-peer network can act as both clients and servers, you're really gonna have you're gonna have some performance issues in a peer-to-peer network. Just based on the fact that you are trying to take one computer and make it both client and a server. So they say in the text, obviously what I've already said, that your simplest peer-to-peer network is two computers connected by a crossover cable. So they give some advantages here, that peer-to-peer networks are easy to set up, less complex, lower cost because you don't have the network devices in there. And I'm assuming, since they're actually saying that, since they're going with this one, that it's just the two computers connected directly. And then they say that it can be used for simple tasks like sharing printers or transferring files. Now, the disadvantages to a peer-to-peer network are that there are no central administration, they aren't as secure, they're not scalable, which is quite true, because you can't really build peer-to-peer networks really, really big. And of course, all devices, because they act both as a client and the server, you're going to have performance issues, and your network performance is going to slow down significantly. So, There's another activity here. So, we have to identify the different roles in a peer-to-peer network. So they have four scenarios, and you have to identify whether the computer is acting as a client server or both. So, first scenario. Trishna connects to the internet and downloads a file from a site using FTP. Is Trishna's computer acting as client server or both? Yes, that would be a client. That is correct. Number two. Juan connects to an e-learning website to learn about networking. So, would his computer be acting as client server or both? Yes, that would be a client. Okay, Noriko has a dedicated computer for sharing her files. Carlos is downloading a folder from Noriko's computer. So, what would Noriko's computer be acting as? That is correct. It would be a server. Okay. Patty has a video game loaded on her computer. Donald has the same video game loaded on his computer. They are playing each other over the network. Is Donald's computer acting as a client server or both? And yes. The follow-up question. Why would it be acting as both? Somebody's keyed. I don't hear any audio.
Yeah, it's requesting and providing data both.
Let's see. Yes, that would be correct on both accounts. Because the computer is and the game is actually trying to request and send information based on, you know, all the positions and everything. Yes, that would be what would be considered both. Very good. All right. Short little section there, but questions before we move on to fun stuff of network topologies. Okay. there are two different types of network topologies. There's a physical and a logical. Now, your physical topology is, you know, how your computers are connected, and they actually do have different maps that they talk about in the text. So they talk about physical topology maps that show the locations of the computers, your network devices, and all the cabling that is strewn around. Run through the office. and they have the logical topology map, which groups computers and hosts by their use. So the physical and the logical topologies, which they don't necessarily get into here, if you're in IT Essentials, you'll get a lot of this in Chapter 8. And I don't remember which chapter, if any, in Discovery they actually talk about the physical and logical topologies. But there are several different kinds. And I'm not sure if I really want to get into that because it can get a little bit confusing, but if anybody wants me to, I can get into it a little bit. If there's any requests, I'll talk about them a little bit. Okay. We have one request. So, your physical topologies, there are several different kinds. You have a bus topology, and these I don't believe are on your exam, so informational only. If they're on the exam, well, then you'll get them. So you have a bus topology, which is pretty much all the computers or all your hosts are on one cable, and they're all connected in one line, for lack of a better description. You have a star topology, which has one centralized host, and then everything else branches off of that. That's kind of what's used in like a server type environment. So you have your server, which is where everything runs to, and then obviously all your client computers are going to run off wherever they need to run to. And then there is another one called, there's a ring topology, which isn't, I don't think it's used anymore, at least not that I'm aware of, to where everything actually is in like a circular type pattern. And then information just kind of passes from one host to the next to the next, and it just keeps going around as it needs to. Just a nice little fun piece of information that I don't think is in the chapter.
Token ring.
Yeah, it would be token ring.
We have a Thursday chat on that.
Yep. Is there a Thursday chat?
Yep, in the 2007 folder, we talk about the architecture and design of token ring.
Interesting. I guess that means I didn't look back far enough in the Thursday chats. So yeah, that's your.
So are token rings used these days? Are those used these days in anything?
Sometimes in banks and stuff where bandwidth and response time is critical, yes, but they're not very common.
Or in places that refuse to change their architecture. But, you know, if you encounter it, it's one of those that you'll probably just have to learn it because they insist on using it.
That's awesome, by the way. Are you on a bus?
Sorry, I have my balcony doors open.
Fair enough.
The days I do a lecture, I close the doors, but since I'm not lecturing tonight, I left them open.
Yeah, no, I just did interesting things to your background, that's all. I thought you were actually on one.
No, just living downtown.
Alright, yeah. Carrie can probably correct me if I'm wrong, but most of the networks that I've seen run off of star topology, at least the networks that I've seen usually have a centralized server, and then everything else runs off of that. That's kind of the more common one that I've seen. What are your thoughts on that one, Carrie?
Yeah, they usually do. It just depends on the layout. I mean, it depends on what sort of redundancy and stuff you want, as to how things are laid out. Obviously, one central server is a point of failure, so you often have redundancy and mirrored things like Active Directories and stuff across multiple servers. Depends on how well-paid and well-trained your IT staff are as to how it's set up.
You'll occasionally also come across, if you need complete, if you need complete redundancy, you'll occasionally come across a mesh, but that's well beyond what we'll probably be talking about.
Yeah, for discovery, yeah, but you will get, for those in IT Essentials or those who have already taken IT Essentials like me and a couple others in this class, the mesh topology is talked about, once again in Chapter 8. All the nice, wonderful, fun stuff you learn about beforehand! Alright, questions on the network topologies before we move on.
Uh, Someone's keyed up and is sending sound again. If you could, check it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, we've got somebody keyed up with no audio. Okay. Alright, so, next section up, is Principles of Communication. So, you have three, things to deal with here. You have your source, your channel, and your destination. So, anybody want to take a stab at what your source would be?
Where it comes from?
Yes, that would be it. Your source is the device, the host, that is sending the information, or that needs to communicate on the network. That would then make the destination the device for which the message was intended, and then you go into a lot more of what it needs to do with that message once it gets it. So your destination is the device that receives the message, and then it goes and decodes it. And we'll get into that in just a little bit. And then, of course, you have your channel, which is the path that the message is sent on. So, then we go into a nice, wonderful section about rules of communication. And it talks about protocols for successful human communication. So you have the identification of sender and receiver, agreed upon medium of communication, appropriate communication mode, common language, grammar and sentence structure, speed and timing of delivery. So that's all what needs to be dealt with when you're dealing with human communication. Well, same can be said for computer communication as well. Now, your protocols define how messages are transmitted and delivered. And there's like six different items here that they go through. The first is encoding, which is when you convert message into a specific language for transmission. Just out of curiosity, does anybody know what language that would end up being for computer communication?
How about bits?
Well, yeah, that's eventually going to be it, because everything has to be turned into binary and bits to go over your network. Okay. So, the message format is basically the structure of your message. And they go into a couple other things there. They talk about encapsulation, which is basically placing one format into another. The example they give in the text is like when you write a letter and you put it in an envelope, that would be encapsulation, because you're putting that letter into the envelope, which is one format being placed in another. And they talk, I didn't put it in my notes, they do talk about frames in here at some point. Like I said, I didn't put that part in my notes, but I think it's coming up. Alright, so they talk about the message size, which they will talk a little bit more about later. We'll talk about more later on. But basically, it's how long is the message. Later on, they'll define how short a message can be, or how long it can be. And timing deals with when to send the message, how fast, and how long to wait for any kind of response. And then they talk about standard message patterns, and they give three different patterns. They give unicast, multicast, and broadcast. So, while we're on that subject, let's see if anybody can tell me what unicast messages are.
Where a message is intended for one other destination. Comes from one source to one destination.
Very, very good. That's what unicast is, exactly. One sender, one receiver. What about multicast?
One sender sending to a lot of different destinations.
Very good. That is it. One sender going to multiple receivers or destinations, as Jamie put it. So, what would that then make a broadcast message?
Message sent to every host on the network.
That is correct. That is one one sender going out to every single host. And the difference between multicast and broadcast is just that. Your multicast goes to like a specific group. Your broadcast goes to everybody. There is a message formatting activity. And if we really want to go through this, we can. Honestly, though, I'm not sure exactly how we're going to do that.
I'd get everyone to read it and come back with questions next week if they...
That would seem a sensible option. Because I'm not sure exactly how we'd go about doing that one in class. There are several other ones in the second half of the chapter that I just skipped over because they either A, didn't have anything in the text for them, or B, I'm just not sure how to get them done in class. So this might be one of those, look this activity over, and if there's any questions, we will go over them in class next time. So how does that sound to everybody? Because I'm not exactly sure of another way to do that.
Which activity is this one, Brian? Is it the, get your MAC address, or...?
No, this is the one where you get a group of people and you pretend to encode it into different messages and stuff, and you have, you know, talk about how network messages are encoded, if this is the activity I think it is.
This is, 3.2.4.3 is the activity number. This is the one where you where you actually have to put the stuff in the right order, as if it were being put into a frame. It's in the there's a section talking about message formats. It's the activity that's in that.
Yeah, I know the
Thank
one.
Thank you.
Okay, so. Does anybody have questions before we move on? Okay, let's move on to protocol use in communication. So, as we said before, protocols define your encoding, your message format, your encapsulation, your size, your timing, and your pattern. That's pretty much all that section goes through, and it defines everything that I've already gone over. Unless I missed something, that's pretty much all there is to that section. Just everything that I just walked through already. Okay. There was a spot, and I'll have to find it, talking about the message size. And it's coming up, I'm thinking. And if memory serves, speaking of message sizes are between 64 and 1,518 bytes, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
There's a whole section of it. We'll go through that in a little bit here. That talks about message sizes and what happens when things are too short, too long. But that's coming up. Okay. So, this section coming up is communicating on a local wired network. And first subsection under here is the importance of protocols. So, on your local network, all the hosts have to use some common protocol. Your wired networks use Ethernet. Now that's pretty much become the standard, just out of everybody using it. And there's a section here that we'll talk about in just a little bit. Okay. So, standardization of protocols, and this is exactly what I was talking about. So, your equipment used to be proprietary, so that one manufacturer's equipment wouldn't work with another. You had to go pretty much buy all your equipment from one company or another. You couldn't interconnect different pieces of equipment. Not fun. Really, really, really not fun. So then they decided that competition would be really good if they would standardize everything. So that brings us to the benefits of standards. They facilitate design. Standards facilitate design. Simplify product development. Promote competition, as I said previous. Provide consistent interconnections. Facilitate training. And provide more vendor choices for customers. So, for everybody using the wonderful Linksys routers, some of this actually still does hold true. I've run into a couple situations, but anyway, what would happen? Wouldn't it be really fun if you couldn't just grab, like, say, a Netgear hub or a Netgear switch and put it in your network? Thanks to standards, well, I shouldn't say that exactly, but thanks to standards, theoretically you should be able to do that. Practical-wise, that might be a different story. a lot of times you end up running the same equipment from same companies. At least with the Linksys router, I know the WRT300N, because that's what I have. You can run the 50 W, I believe it's a 54G hub. You can run that as a repeater, but it won't run as a repeater with anything but the Linksys routers. So that's kind of a proprietary thing that they decided to do. But I have both of them, so it doesn't really matter to me, because that goes into a whole nother part of another chapter, which we'll get into. Questions thus far? Okay. And for those interested, they do have 802.11 is the IEEE network. I can't think of the name of it. But your Ethernet
specification.
Yes, thank you. So that's what happens when wording just decides to slip out of your mind right offhand. So yeah, your Ethernet is 802.11 or 802.3. Your wireless is
802.3.
Yep, Your wireless is 802.11. And then they have a nice little diagram that shows all your Ethernet standards, starting from the 1970s till the time of this course. All right. Any questions? Okay, so we'll move on to physical addressing, which your physical address is your MAC address for your network cards, whether it's your wireless, whether it's regular wired Ethernet, you're going to have a MAC address, and those are burnt onto your cards, and they cannot be changed, although in certain circumstances they can be cloned, but that's router stuff. I don't know, there's not any way to actually clone a MAC address on a computer, is there, Carrie?
Yes, there is.
Yeah.
Oh, is there? Okay.
Yeah, if you look under the advanced properties of most network cards, there is an editable field called MAC address. However, if you change that without knowing what you're doing, the IT managers and things are probably going to come down and find you. But yeah, it can
with a hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah, something tells me they probably would come down with a hammer.
Nails not included.
Probably figuratively and literally. Okay. So, when a computer wants to communicate on the network, it sends its own MAC address as a source and the MAC address of the destination as well. The other hosts on the network decode the destination MAC address, and if it's not for them, well, they just throw it away and get rid of it, because it doesn't have anything to do with them. So, then we move to then we move on to Ethernet communication. Now, they have a nice fancy term here called a protocol data unit, which they abbreviate PDU, which is the same thing as a frame. Now, your frames contain the source and destination MAC addresses, as well as messaging and preambles for messaging, I mean the preambles for sequencing and timing of messages. You have your start of frame delimiter, the length and the type of frame, and you have a frame check sequence that is used to detect any errors that may have crept into the frame as it's going over the network. Ah, here we go. The message sizes, as I was talking about previous, are limited to, and I was correct in my remembering of it, between 64 and 1,518 bytes. Now, obviously networks can be made up of either fiber or copper cabling, which would be your Ethernet, or your coax. Now, they do have a diagram here, which I did put in my notes, because I think it's kind of interesting and could be important. So it's the structure of your Ethernet frame. Now, this actually goes through all the bytes, the number of bytes that are used for the various parts of the frame. If anybody wants me to go over that, I can.
I'd encourage people to take a look at it. You don't need to know what every frame field is to pass the exam. You just have to have some idea that, you know, there's a source MAC, a destination MAC, and a frame check sequence. We're certainly not expecting you guys to be able to construct an Ethernet frame out of your head. If you want to construct an Ethernet frame, may I recommend Ethernet, The Definitive Guide by O'Reilly from Bookshare. But I can't even do that, so it's all good.
Yeah, the diagram here I did actually put in. It's got some rather interesting information, in my opinion. But it's not necessarily something that you need to know how many bytes are in the preamble and your frame check and the rest of that. But it's just something interesting that may take a look at. Okay. Why did this activity get thrown in here? We're not going to do that one because it's dealing with building the frame. That activity, that you can look over. Once again, if you have questions, we can go over that next week. Because I do have a feeling this chapter is going to go into next week. Okay. Do we have any questions before we move on?
I suppose just briefly for me, I'm surprised... Sorry, I'll try that again.
There you go.
I guess just briefly for me, I'm surprised that the messages can be, I guess, up to that kind of size. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm surprised a single message could get that big.
Well, 1500 bytes isn't much. That's maybe, you know, a few frames of MP3. The other thing to keep in mind is if you're thinking that a bit time is around about 100 nanoseconds, it doesn't take long to send blocks of those sizes. So in fact, on some networks, and that's not covered here, we actually use what's called jumbo frames, where you can actually have frames up to 9,000, 16,000, 32,000 bytes long. But they're only used on very high-speed networks that are very specialised. so, yeah, 1,500 bytes isn't as much as you'd think, and obviously the overhead of the headers is going to come into play. So if 5% of your payload is headers, you want the frames as big as possible so that the headers are smaller. So the bigger the frames, the less overhead you're going to have from your headers. So that's why they make the frames those size.
I was just thinking a 1,500 bytes over dial-up would be slightly painful.
That is true. That's why we usually set our MTU to 768 bytes on dial-up, but we don't cover that here.
Fair enough.
Well, that actually... some of that may be covered in, I believe, chapter 6 or 7. Because there's a couple of labs that you have to go through the Linksys routers, and they do ask about, I think they ask about your MTU, which is your maximum transmit unit. Okay, so next section up is hierarchical design of networks. So, in short, if you have fairly substantial network, you want to split it up into smaller pieces. Now, there are three different layers that they talk about. They talk about the access layer, which gives connections to hosts in a local network. They have the distribution layer, which connects your local networks or your access layers, and they have the core layer, which is your high-speed layer, and that connects all your distribution layers. This is where fun really gets. This is where the fun really starts. but they consider. They really interchange access layer and local network a lot, it seems to me, in this chapter. But really, the access layer is like just your standard local network. So if you're behind a switch, that would be your access layer. So it's just those computers within your local area. And then it moves up to your distribution layer, which would be your routers, and the core layer, which they don't really... But it's... the core layer is a lot more high-speed routers, switches, all that nice, good, wonderful fun networks stuff. Okay. Questions before we go on. Okay, so they talk about logical addressing, which is really nothing more than just your IP address. Obviously your MAC address is going to remain the same, unless you decide to clone it and then your IT people get highly upset, but your MAC address will stay the same. Your IP address changes depending on the network you're on, other factors that are involved. Alright, so your IP address contains two parts. You have a network portion and you have a host portion. They don't really talk about subnet mask in this chapter, and I really think that they probably should, especially if they're going to split the IP address into the two parts that they are splitting it into. The network portion of your IP address will stay the same for all hosts on your local network. Your host portion is going to differ based on your host. Now, both the IP address and the MAC address are required on the hierarchical network. Now, they don't talk about subnet mask, and there are, I wonder if I should get into this here, but there are several different classes of subnet masks, and those classes determine your network portion. Does anybody really want me to get into, there's like three or four different classes, there's three that you really would need to deal with. If anybody wants me to get into it,
I'd probably simplify it and say, look, you know, A is really big networks, B is medium-sized, and C are little ones. I'd probably leave it at that at this point and then get into the specifics of it in Chapter 5.
Yeah, that's probably true, because I think it is covered in a lot more detail in Chapter 5. So, yeah, suffice it to say that Class A covers really, really huge corporate networks. B is medium size, and C would be your home networks or your small office networks. But your subnet mask is actually used to determine the network portion of your IP address. And I really think that's all that needs to be said about that right now. If you want any further information, see Chapter 5, when you get to deal with all sorts of binary and conversions between binary and decimal, and the nice, wonderful things that come along with that. Alright, questions thus far. Okay, that either means that everybody's asleep, or I'm doing a fairly decent job here. Okay.
You're right.
You could do what I do and just say something completely outrageous to see if they're awake.
Might have to try that in a little bit. Alright. So let's talk about the access and distribution layers and devices. This is what I was kind of alluding to earlier. They consider your access layer the local network. That's a fair enough definition. So your access layer devices are either your hubs or your switches. The hubs, I think they go into this a little bit more in detail. But your hubs are considered concentrators or they call them concentrators. So what they end up doing is they end up just spitting out any information to any available or any connected computers. Your switches are a little bit more intelligent than that. They basically will forward messages based on MAC addresses. And I think that's all I want to say about that for now, because we go into a little bit more of that later. Your network portion of your IP address will be the same for all the hosts in any given access layer. So if you have two different access layers, they're going to have two different network portions and of IP addresses. So your distribution layer is a layer that manages flow of data between networks. They are actually connected by a little bit more powerful switches, and they're also connected by routers. Alright, and then they talk about the core layer, which is a high-speed backbone that connects multiple networks. And those are connected by really, really high-speed switches and routers. So, there's an activity here that you have to go through and select the addresses that are needed, whether it's MAC or IP address, the devices involved, and the layers at which the task occurs for each scenario. I'm wondering what the easiest way to do this would be, because we did this with the Indian class. Let's see. I think what I'm going to do is this. We'll go and do each scenario. We'll split it into three. And this might be the last thing we do for this class. So, your choices, obviously, are going to be, for the address, you're going to need either your MAC or the IP address. Your devices are going to either be a hub or a switch or a router. Your layers are going to be your access distribution or core. So I think what I'm going to do is split this up into three different parts. So we'll do the addressing first, the device, and then the layer. So first scenario, Josh shares a file with another user on the network. Which address would need to be used?
Can I ask a stupid question? Have we defined the difference between MAC addresses and IP addresses yet? I may have been asleep.
Yeah.
One's physical and one's logical.
Yeah, that's true. One is assigned by the administrator, the other one is assigned by the network manufacturer.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, I'm pretty sure we covered that. If we didn't cover it in enough detail, somebody let me know and we'll go back and recover it.
Well, we have one answer of MAC address. Anybody else got any answers? Which addresses are they going to use?
Okay. Now, here's where it's going to get rather interesting, because the answer key for this one got a little bit... I'm thinking the answers from what I've seen have gotten a little bit messed up on this one. What would your opinion on this one be, Carrie?
Probably IP address, because the MAC addresses are used for card-to-card communications, but you've still got to use the IP addresses to do it. It kind of uses both.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning toward both in a way, but I'm not sure on that one. I'm kind of leaning toward both because of the IP address would be used for the actual sharing from one computer to the other. But you would have to use the MAC address as well. Alright, so what device would they use? Either a hub, switch, or a router? Got two answers for a switch. Any others? Three answers for a switch. And yeah, that would do it. Now, what layer would that happen at? Access distribution or core? Okay. I'm hearing, what, two for access and one for distribution? I'm honestly thinking because it doesn't... It sort of specifies that it's on the... Well, it doesn't specify whether or not it's on the same network, but in the same token, it says that Josh is sharing a file with another user on the network. So my assumption would be
access, access
based on that fact that it's not actually going between two different networks. Okay, scenario two is Tamar downloads a file from a server located in another country. So what address first? Alright, I'm hearing a unanimous IP, and that would do it, actually, because you're going between networks. Alright, so what about the devices? That's pretty unanimous for a router. Yep, and that would do it as well. Alright, so what layer? Well, the majority says distribution, and there was a core in there. I would probably say both would be correct, due to the fact that A, you are going between different networks, and B, because you're going between different countries as well, you would need that high-speed layer. So that would be my general opinion on it. Okay, scenario three. Natalie sends an email from her computer Natalie sends an email from her email account at school to a student at a different school. There we go. That's better. So, what address would they need? That's pretty unanimous. And judging the fact that they are, again, going between servers and schools, I would pretty much go with the IP address as well. That would make the most sense. So, what about the devices? Okay, I'm hearing a unanimous router. That would actually be a good choice too, because you're going between different so because you're going between the different networks, yeah, that would be a good choice. So what layer, or possibly layers, but what layer would it be? Alright, I'm hearing a mainly distribution. I don't know. That's kind of a tricky one there. Distribution is right, because you're going between the different networks. Core could... Yeah, you could do core because of the high-speed access between the two schools. So yeah, I think I would end up going with both on that one. Any other opinions on that?
It would just depend where you live, I think, really. I mean, they don't really specify exactly where the schools are, because there are some places that can maybe be close together, but, traffic goes around in a lot of really diverse ways, even going between the same two computers on any given day, from what I understand, from what I can tell, from looking at Traceroute and stuff.
That's a very good point. They don't specify, they really don't specify a lot of times where these computers are, and so that is true. But yeah, I think I would go with distribution and core based on the fact that you are going between two different networks, and you could possibly use the high-speed core layer to go in the two schools as well. Alright. Let's do this last one here, and I believe that will call it a day. Alright, number four. Rhonda connects to the school network in order to download a file for her term report. The server is located on a different local network than her computer. So, what would she need? What address would she need? That sounds good enough to me. Due to the fact that you are running two different networks, your IP address would probably be the best one to use. What device would be used? Unanimous decision seems to be a router, because you are going between two different networks. So, what layer? Or layers, depending. And that seems reasonable, because obviously, you would be using the distribution layer to go between networks. You would actually technically, I believe, be using all three layers, because you're connecting at the local level, at the access layer, connecting at the distribution layer to go between the two networks. Possibly the core, depending upon where the network is. Did you have something you
Didn't
wanted to
say
add
in the
mind?
Same school though?
Nope.
Yeah, it's two local networks at the same school.
It's two different local networks on the same. But they're both within the same. It says they're both same school network, but two different local networks. So I'm thinking more or less that it's access and distribution.
Yep.
All right. So I think that's a good stopping point, because we have like two or three more sections to I think we got two more sections or three more sections to go. And I know we're not going to go through this one section in 10 minutes. So I think this is a good stopping point. So if we have any questions, we'll take them. All right. Final chance. Any questions before we stop recording?
Yeah, what labs would we be responsible this week?
Can you move a little closer to your microphone there, Jamie?
Which labs are you responsible for this week was the question.
Let's see. I'll put a task list out. Because I'm not sure exactly which sections we've covered. I didn't actually mark the section numbers down in my notes. So I will look that up and put a task list out for this week.
Very good. Is that better?
Yeah, that's better. I just couldn't hear you the first time.